All right, we'll move along to agenda item number three, report and possible discussion on annual actuarial evaluation report by Gallagher Benefit Services, Inc., by Jen Turk, Gallagher Benefit Services representative.
And Jen is here from Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you.
All the way down. And she'll go through, and this is an annual event here, and she'll go through and explain the process and then go through the evaluation itself. It was, I have some handouts if anybody wants a copy of that. And it was in your report, okay? I don't know if we got enough. I just made a few copies. Anybody else want to need a copy?
Yeah, I'll get one. Is there enough for everybody?
No, I only made about six copies.
Got it.
Is this the same? It's on our...
It is the same. So I will turn it over to Jim. Let me get you the...
Hi guys. So I am the new Doug Anderson. He's probably, I don't look quite like him, but I'm in the same role. Doug has moved on to a public sector executive position. If you guys didn't know, it was like someone made a job just for him. I mean, he enjoyed working so much with all the public sector folks. So it was right up his alley. He couldn't turn it down. So this year, I was heading up the valuation report. I kept the presentation the same, so this should hopefully be fairly familiar to everyone. The first slide is just a quick overview of Gallagher, large international firm with kind of a local presence, we like to think. So this kind of shows just a quick snapshot of the process that we go through every year. So we gather data from a couple different sources. From Wells Fargo, we reconcile the retirees who are getting the payments. And then we also, from Crystal, get a listing of all the participants that she knows that have changed. And then we use our assumptions and methods that you guys had talked about pretty thoroughly last year. You'd updated a couple of assumptions, the retirement, and the mortality table updated last year, so those are a little more in line with what the history has been showing. And then we use your plan provisions, which are fairly simple now since it's been frozen for a while, so there's no one accruing a benefit, so that part of it is stays kind of the same. So we use those inputs to come up with the liability or the present value benefits. And then for you guys, the present value benefits, there's no split in that second line. If you had people accruing a future benefit, that would be that right kind of box. They call it a normal cost. And then, but for you guys, you don't have any future service, so the two are the same. And then we split out what you have in assets versus what is unfunded, and then we spread that over your amortization period. So that's kind of a big picture overview of the process. So this is the first key input is your participant data. There's been some shifts both from the active group and the terminated vested group to the retiree group. And we also had, as David mentioned, there was two who had passed away who are no longer in the counts. People who didn't have a survivor benefit or else their spouse is no longer living, so there's no benefit to pass on to them. So the count went from 351 to 349 total, and you can kind of see a lot of the shift is going towards the retirees. And I think we'll continue to see that over the next 10 or so years as we kind of see the baby boom push to retire. So that'll be a common shift. The next page here just shows the more details about how people move from group to group. You can see on the far right-hand side the two who died without the beneficiary coming off. So the 351 total participants is going down to 349 as of March 1st. And the next just shows a scatter of the current actives. It's kind of funny that your 55 to 59 kind of drops down, but that's a pretty typical where you see kind of a bubble especially in a frozen plan, since you don't have any new people coming in the younger groups, we're seeing a shift towards that later group. So that's a pretty common looking curve there for your active employees. So this next one shows the assumptions, and we use the same as last year, since you guys had kind of gone through an experience study process and looked at these more thoroughly last year. We typically like to look at them every 4 years or so a lot of times. So we'll probably let these sit for a couple of years and see how the experience comes through. The biggest shift that we made, it used to assume that everyone would retire by age 65, and now we've spread that out a little bit. So you have a few more people going out after age 65. You still have the bulk of them going out by 65, but we were seeing a lot of people staying on a couple years longer, so we spread those out a little bit there. And then we also, last year, had added the mortality improvement scale, where instead of just having a fixed mortality table that we use every year, it's basically saying people are getting a little bit healthier each year, so the mortality rates are going down just a little bit each year. So that's built in now. The generational is what that refers to. And then the other ones are pretty much the same as they have been. You're smoothing your assets, so you're not seeing as big of a hit from the market downturn that you normally would. So those are deferred over a five-year period. And then you've been using the amortization period was closed 4 years ago, so now there's 16 years that you're spreading your unfunded liability out over. There's 16 years left as of 2016. So this shows kind of a projection of the total plan participants. You can see the last red and green bar, that's where we are currently, and you can see there's just a gradual shift as, you know, retirees age and pass away. We'll see the number trend down every year, a couple a year. So it'll be around for a while if you guys don't do anything to get rid of the plan, I guess is what this is showing. I mean, when we're 30 years down the road, you still have a number of people in the plan kind of hanging on. Most of them will be retirees by that point, but especially with the assuming that they get healthier, that kind of draws out the line of when we expect everyone to be gone out of the plan. This next one shows basically the green is how much assets in the bank could cover of your projected benefit payments. You're averaging a little under $2 million a year right now, and that'll gradually increase as more retirees join the retired population. So the green is what you have in the bank right now, and then that black on the right is showing future contributions and the interest, investment income that'll cover the future payments. So, as David said, there's about just over 18 million as of, and this was as of March 1st as well.
Is the black the deficit?
Yeah, exactly. It'll be made up by the contributions that you guys are going to make over the next 16 years, and then the investment income that the assets are going to earn on this. So this next one just shows a similar to what David had just shown on the Wells Fargo statement, $80,000 in expenses, the $1.7 million currently in benefit payments, and as we've talked about, it was not a great year-over-year return. It was negative, but for the actuarial valuation process, we smooth some of that out so you don't see the full impact, and it doesn't drive your it kind of smooths your contribution out by deferring some of those losses into the future. So you don't have your contribution jumping up and down every time you have swings in the market. So, but you can see there'll be some losses to be recognized over the next 3-4 years. The next one here, so this is specific to your plan. So the liability as of March 1st, we were just over $30 million. And then after we smooth out those losses, we're getting a hair over $21 million in actuarial assets. So that's compared to the just over $18 million. So you can see the impact of the smoothing this year is about a $3 million in deferred losses that we'll recognize over the next 4 years. And so you can see the unfunded right now is $9 million, and then we spread that over a 16-year amortization period to get just under $900,000. That's a beginning of year number, the $882,000 is as of March 1st, and you guys typically make your contributions, you know, sometime in the middle of the year, so we recommend adding interest onto that, so we get the $911,000 is the interest adjusted.
David, why do we wait until to fund in the fall? I've forgotten why we do that.
It's part of the budget, and then we approve the budget in July.
Okay.
And it gets funded.
I'm sorry. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. We make the recommendation, and then the budget's approved with it.
Right. Yep. Okay, I've forgotten that part. Thank you.
Yep.
The
so
thing
we're...
that you might want to do, though, is in August, do a resolution to make sure that we invest it instead of waiting until...
So right now our recommended would be the $911,000. The next one just shows the same process over a few different interest rates. So if you were using a more aggressive interest assumption, basically if you assumed your future assets are going to earn 7.5%, you'd have to put in less because future investment returns would make up more. If you were very, very conservative, I guess I shouldn't say that anymore. This used to be a very, very conservative assumption, but it's getting to be a little more realistic, the 5.5. If you assume you're not going to earn as much on future asset returns, you'd have to make up for it in contributions, basically. So you can see the bottom line, you'd have a range from just under $700,000 to just over $1.1 million, looking at the different investment returns.
What are most of your... the plans that you've seen of late, what are their assumed rates?
For public sector, they're probably lagging behind, bringing them down. So 7 to 7.5 is probably average nationwide. But they're getting pressure from auditors and their banks and things to bring that down. So it's definitely trending downward every year.
Well, we have to report that liability in our annual statement now.
Yes.
Yep, so the $9 million would be the unfunded.
Yeah, so that showed up as a liability on our...
Yeah, and we made that adjustment last year.
Yep, so then the last couple are just... this is just showing your contribution requirement over the next, 16 years now until your amortization period. This is if, you know, all assumptions are met, so this is by no means set in stone, but if your population, you know, behaves exactly according to your assumptions that you're using, this is what your contributions are going to look like. You can see how it goes up over the next 4 years. That's as we're phasing out those asset losses that we smoothed out. So bottom line is you're going to be at about $1.2 million if all assumptions are met in the long run. And then after the 16-year amortization period is done, we see that drop off to zero, and we would expect at that point you'd be fully funded too. Have no unfunded liability on your books. So the next one just shows the liabilities and the assets. You can see your asset line, which the orange one is the market value, kind of ignoring that smoothing mechanism. You can see it's pretty flat, considering you're putting in about $1 million, but you're also paying out, you know, $1.7 million currently, about $2 million on average in benefit payments. So the assets aren't going to grow by $1 million a year that you're putting in because you're paying a lot out in benefits. But as you pay those benefits out, it's also expected to kind of shrink that liability curve, the black bars. So the liability shrinks each year that you pay retirees out. They're one less year you have to pay. So, and then you can see in about 2032, after your amortization period is up, we see it, the two lines converging, and we expect you to be at 100%, you know, barring any gains and losses from assumptions not being met. So that's the story as of March 1st of the pension plan.
Anybody have any questions for Jen? Nothing?
Thank you very much.
We appreciate that.